Radio Prague News.
The lower house of parliament has stripped MP David Rath of immunity, allowing his prosecution on corruption charges. A great majority of Czechs believe the labour market is discriminatory, according to a new poll. And in football, striker Milan Baroš withdraws from the national team's training session over problems with thigh muscle. The lower house of the Czech parliament on Tuesday voted to strip MP David Rath of his immunity, allowing his prosecution on corruption charges. Out of the 185 MPs present, 183 voted in favour of Mr. Rath's prosecution. Before the vote, Mr. Rath, who has been in police custody since his arrest on corruption charges last month, addressed the lower house of parliament. In the unprecedented presence of a police escort in the Chamber of Deputies, the former governor of Central Bohemia and a prominent opposition figure rejected the corruption charges against him and said he had not accepted any bribes, accusing the government of framing him. MP David Rath was arrested on the May 14th with an alleged bribe of 7 million crowns. The police have charged him with corruption related to a public procurement project partially financed with EU funds. The Czech Finance Ministry on Tuesday filed a criminal complaint against six former managers of the coal mining firm Mostecká uhelná, whose 1999 privatization is under investigation by Swiss authorities. The managers face accusations that they privatized the company using funds earmarked for the recultivation of former coal mines, which later appeared on foreign bank accounts. The Czech police also investigated the case but shelved it in 2008. The police in Switzerland, however, accused seven people linked to the deal. Around 85% of Czechs believe that some population groups are discriminated against on the labour market, according to a new poll by the STEM agency released on Tuesday. Nearly 90% of those who took part in the survey said age was the most frequent cause of discrimination, followed by health conditions and pregnancy. Some 64% of those polled also cited race and ethnicity. The poll suggests that religious beliefs and political convictions, along with sexual orientation, were among the less frequent causes of discrimination on the Czech labour market. Czech retail revenues contracted in April by 4.1% year-on-year, according to figures released by the Czech Statistical Office on Tuesday. Revenues fell mainly in the food and fuel segments, as well as car sales and repairs. After seasonal adjustments, the revenues contracted by 2.1%, after a 0.4% decrease registered in the previous months. Analysts say the decrease reflects the customers' efforts to save and is a sign of the economy losing dynamics. The Czech travel agency Red Green Tours declared bankruptcy on Tuesday after it was unable to pay for the transfer of around 300 of its clients abroad. The move has left some 100 clients of the agency stranded in Turkey and northern Cyprus. Red Green Tours is the second Czech travel agency to go bankrupt this year. The Union Insurance Company, which insured the agency against bankruptcy, will now pay for the return of the agency's clients to the Czech Republic. A court in Česká Lípa in northern Bohemia on Tuesday began hearing the case of a Ukrainian citizen accused of sexually abusing 118 underage girls on the internet. His youngest victim was 8 years old. According to the prosecution, the man approached the girls on the internet asking them for photos and inviting them to have sex with him. He also masturbated in front of the web camera. If convicted, the man faces up to 8 years in jail. And in football, striker Milan Baroš withdrew from Tuesday's training session of the Czech national side in Poland over problems with his thigh muscle, the news agency ČTK reported. The 30-year-old international cut the session short by some 10 minutes. The team's physical therapist said should the pain persist, the footballer will have to be examined in hospital. However, the national team manager said they believed Baroš will be fit for the team's first Euro 2012 game against Russia on Friday. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The coming days will be rather bleak, with overcast skies, occasional rain showers and daytime highs ranging between 17 and 21 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, Czech demonstrators demand that the Czech Republic sever all diplomatic ties with Syria, though the foreign ministry seems to have little intention of doing so. After that, Czech youths think the Roma minority is the major problem in society, according to a new study. And later on in this week's Spotlight, we'll visit the South Bohemian town of Tábor and the Museum of the Hussite Movement. I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. On Tuesday, protesters from the Initiative for a Free Syria gathered in front of the Czech government's headquarters. Demonstrators are demanding that the Czech Republic sever all diplomatic ties with Syria, as many other European nations have already done. However, it seems unlikely that the foreign ministry will take this step. Sarah Borufka has more.
The massacre in the Syrian town of Hula, in which over 100 civilians, nearly half of them children, were brutally murdered, has triggered international condemnation. Just a few days after the attack happened, governments around the world reacted by expelling Syrian diplomats. Among the countries to join the unusually coordinated effort were Germany, France, Italy, Spain, and Canada. However, the Czech foreign ministry has so far refused to expel Syrian diplomats. While it has issued an official statement condemning the bloodshed, it appears unlikely that the Syrian ambassador will be asked to leave the Czech Republic. Members of the Initiative for a Free Syria have slammed the Czech position on the issue and gathered at the government's headquarters on Tuesday to protest this stance. Among the protesters was the Syrian-born architect Hamam Youssef.
We are trying to tell the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to take a stand against what is happening in Syria, as it happened in England and France and the other countries that decided to expel the diplomatic missions there. They decided to say eventually to take this stand to support the cause of the Syrian people, to support their longing for freedom. And we expect that the Czech Republic will take the same stand.
In a statement for the Četika news agency, the foreign ministry said it does not want to expel the Syrian ambassador for fear that Syria would reciprocate by closing down the Czech embassy in Damascus. The Czech embassy in the Syrian capital has been serving not just Czech citizens, but also those of EU member states that have closed down their diplomatic missions. However, the organizer of Tuesday's protest believes that the government of Syrian President Bashar Assad will need to be completely isolated before things start to change. This is what Rashid Khalil had to say on the issue.
Our initiative was born when this criminal regime started killing women, children, and unarmed demonstrators. Back then, we wrote the Czech government an official letter asking it to sever its diplomatic relations with Syria. The reaction was not positive. The government merely condemned violence, but I think now, after the massacre in Hula, it is time for this regime to be completely isolated and for the international community to find a solution to this situation.
Members of the For a Free Syria initiative say they are determined to continue protesting until the Czech stance on this issue changes.
Many thanks to Sarah Borufka. This is Radio Prague. A study conducted by the non-governmental organization People in Need, together with Millward Brown, gauging how Czech secondary school students view Czech society and the world, has produced some worrying results, along with usual dissatisfaction over issues such as corruption and poor governance. Highlighted in a previous study in 2009, the majority of the 1,100 students queried perceived the number one issue as problems with the Roma minority, citing an alleged unwillingness on their part to work, improve in their studies, and so on. Jan Wellinger spoke to Jana Havlíčková from People in Need, who discussed the idea behind the project as well as the result.
The research was conducted within the project, which is called Who Else? And this project is a part of an educational program, which is called One World in Schools. And the purpose of this project is to support young people to be more involved in the civil society, to be more engaged, to be active citizens. The aim of the research was to find out the attitudes and opinions of young people and how they perceive the current situation in the society.
Where do students, where do young people perceive the biggest problems in society to be?
The biggest problem perceived by young people is the Roma minority. Compared with the year 2009, where the main problem was political representation, now the main problem is Roma minority. The results are really alarming. However, we are not really surprised because the results reflect the situation in the whole Czech societies. I believe that if we carried out the research among the adult population, the results would be maybe even worse.
What do you think is the basis for how many of these students perceive fellow Romani citizens? Do you think that many of them have even personal experience, or that this is more of an irrational or emotional kind of response?
I think it's more emotional response because I don't know if I can see that most of them, but I think at least part of them don't have direct experience with Roma people, and even these students perceive the problem. So I think it's more how the image of Roma people is shown in media. I think the media also play a big role how this minority is perceived by young people and also by the whole Czech society.
What percentage of students then listed the Roma as the number one problem?
It was 55%.
From the point of view of an organization such as People in Need, which one of the main aims is to fight racism and discrimination, what do you think has to be done?
All stakeholders should conduct something that will lead to solve this problem, and not only NGO. I think also Ministry of Education should reflect these results.
Jana Havličková of the People in Need Foundation talking there to Jan Wellinger. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey, and now on to the South Bohemian town of Tábor and this week's Spotlight. Jan Žižka, the Renaissance knight, Jan Žižka, the heathen bully, both these faces of the Hussite military genius and much more is on display at the Hussite Museum in Tábor, South Bohemia, which hosts a permanent exhibition dedicated to the 15th century movement. The museum is entered through an imposing Gothic hall dominated by a statue of Žižka on horseback. Then the visitor is drawn into the atmosphere of the late Middle Ages with an award-winning film that covers the outbreak of the Hussite Wars. The story of the Hussite movement then plays out through the 10 halls of the museum. It is a story that continues to develop and change, as the museum's Klára Smolíková tells us.
Not only does interpretation and emphasis change, but the clarity with which we see the Hussite movement changes as well. The creators of the new exhibit, namely the museum's historian Dr. Vibiral, approach the topic with a kind of relativism. It could have been like this or like that. We don't know. That can be a bit of a problem when it comes to our child visitors, because children need to know how things were. But downstairs they have a space where they can dress up like Hussites, put together a puzzle in the shape of Hussite shields, build a war wagon, and then they feel like they have a grasp of something.
Children can discover the key concepts of the Hussite movement through comic book panels. There are tasks for them to accomplish hidden away in the secret corners and peepholes offering them many an odd spectacle. They can also try out what it's like to sit on a king's throne or wear a chainmail shirt that weighs 12 kilos. The unguided tour won the Gloria Musealis Award last year for Museum Exhibition of the Year, even in spite of a conspicuous lack of what one generally expects from an exhibit, original artifacts.
Nemáme mnoho artefaktů, my prostě nemáme.
We don't actually have many artifacts. Nothing has survived. People are often asking us, where do you keep the originals? They just don't exist. We have the remnants of a flute and a sword. That's how it is. So we work a lot with sound and with emotion. Right here you see an area where I recommend you go and listen to the words of the reform preachers and consider the impression it left on people before there was the internet, television and newspapers, and they visited the house of God and listened to the reformers.
In the story of the Protestant Reformation, the Hussites are often forgotten, despite their indelible impact. But in terms of military history, their legacy is very strong indeed. In the days of knights in shining armor, the rebel peasants changed the rules of warfare. They were famous for turning farming implements like the flail into weapons of war. A primitive form of tank is attributed to them, as is a unique kind of crane that took advantage of the tremendous weight of the armor that the crusading knights wore and dismounted them.
The Hussites had to change the rules of the game, whereby armored knights would just rush each other because they did not have enough horses or equipment, so they used war wagons. The wagons allowed them to be at the same height as the knights, and to that they added that element that was most significant for Hussite warfare, firearms. Cannons and early mortars and pistoli among the first portable firearms. The whole world knows the Czech word pistola, as it is the root of the word pistol. Until that time, the knights had been absolutely invincible, and now they had become a pile of iron that would fall off its horse and couldn't get up again, especially if they found themselves in an emptied pond, as was the case in the Battle of Sudoměř.
The pistol, or pištěla, which in turn comes from the Czech word for pipe, is a very primitive weapon by our standards, but it was the height of modernity at the time. It had a wooden handle with an iron barrel on the end into which the gunpowder and ball were stuffed. Moreover, it was nearly impossible to aim the weapon, but that was not the most important thing. Most importantly, it caused utter chaos on the enemy side.
We actually wanted to put the gunpowder on display here at the museum, and they told us, you're insane, it will blow up. So what we have here are the separate elements of gunpowder, sulfur, charcoal and saltpeter. The early rifles and pistols were lit with a match. The cannons and mortars used a branding iron. The war wagons then were extremely important strategic weapons. They were essentially normal wagons that were used to transport pigs, hay, wheat and so on, and they were modified for use in battle. We know from the chronicles that they would chain the wagons together wheel to wheel. Like most of the weapons here in the museum, these are replicas made in the 19th century when the Hussite movement was rediscovered in Tábor. Back then, they had started holding reenactments of Žižka's campaigns and created period weapons for the purpose.
A large part of the museum is naturally devoted to Jan Žižka himself. There is little doubt that Žižka was one of the greatest military commanders in the history of warfare. He was a revolutionary thinker in a time of revolution, and he is probably one of only a handful of generals in history who never lost a battle. Other than that, the facts about his life and person are very shaky, particularly the question of what he actually looked like.
This is Josef Václav Myslbek's statue of Žižka from 1877, which used to stand on the square. The pedestal is still there, but not the statue. Some miserly South Bohemian apparently decided that he would save money by having the bronze statue cast in one of the cheapest workshops. And after 1 year, it fell to pieces. Myslbek was so traumatized by the experience that when he made the famous statue of St. Wenceslas on Prague's Wenceslas Square, he didn't sleep and wouldn't leave the statue until it had been cast. We have also been trying to figure out which eye Žižka wore his patch on. We don't know. He apparently did have a problem with his eye because the name Žižka, or Šiška, was a nickname for someone with an eye problem. He could have been cross-eyed. Often he is displayed with a cloth over both eyes. When we were children, we used to discuss how he could have led an army in battle when he couldn't see. Well, one of the interpretations is that he was blinded by faith, that it had nothing to do with eye patches. For Myslbek, though, art was more important than credibility.
An aged warrior of 60 with a wedded daughter, two homes and a lofty position as the head of the castle guards, one could wonder why Žižka wanted to continue fighting when the Hussite wars broke out. One camp of historians believes Žižka was simply a bloodthirsty ruffian, and there are portraits in the museum that reflect that idea. More likely, though, is that he was compelled to fight for his nation and its religious beliefs when both were under attack from virtually the whole outside world. And so there are portraits of Žižka the Renaissance knight as well, and even Žižka resembling John the Baptist. But it isn't portraits of Žižka that sell best at the museum shop, says Klára Smolíková.
The most popular souvenir is the eye patch. We thought that the children would enjoy it, but it sells best among adults. And then there are the comics, which introduce a lot of new things to the children. The comics don't have a story. They're a dictionary of words you have to know in order to understand the Hussite movement. Even a word like Pope can cause great heated debate among children. And after 10 minutes, you find out they think a Pope is something very strange indeed. But the comics have been so successful that we have arranged to publish them as a book this autumn.
That was Klára Smolíková of the Hussite Museum in Tábor, ending that edition of Spotlight. Topping off our show now for today is the next edition of our language learning series, The ABCs of Czech, brought to you on this occasion by Pavla Horáková.
Welcome to the ABC of Czech, where this season we are discussing vocabulary related to Czech food and cuisine. Today I'm joined by
Martin Mikule.
And we take a look at Czech cakes and pastries.
Koláče a sladké pečivo.
Or sweet baked goods. In Czech cuisine, the basic ingredient is yeast dough.
Kynuté těsto.
It makes the buns and cakes soft and fluffy, but also quite filling, so in some families they are eaten as the main meal. Let's start with perhaps the best-known Czech pastry.
Buchta.
And in the plural?
Buchty.
They are yeast buns filled with fruit, plum jam, sweet cheese or ground poppy seeds and baked in an oven. They can be up to the size of a fist and are usually square. They acquire that shape from sitting right next to each other in a baking tray. Everyone has a different preference as to the filling of the
buchty.
For example, my favorite are
povidlové buchty.
Buns filled with plum jam. And Martin prefers
tvarohové buchty. Yum yum.
Filled with sweet cottage cheese and raisins. Others prefer poppy seed buns.
Makové buchty.
Or
buchty s mákem.
That's just another way of saying it. Those are filled with ground poppy seeds, which are first cooked in milk to make the stuffing softer and tastier. Another favorite traditional Czech cake is
koláč
or
koláče
in the plural. The name comes from the word
kolo,
meaning circle or wheel. So it's clear that
koláče
are round in shape. You cut out a circular shape from yeast dough and place a bit of jam, sweet cheese, ground poppy seeds or virtually any fruit on top of it and bake. The name
koláč
was gradually passed on to another type of cake, which is no longer round in shape. You just spread the yeast dough across the baking tray and spread it with halved fruits, like plums and apricots, or pieces of apple, blueberries and red currants, and bake. There are many regional varieties of
koláče
with many different regional names, so please don't be confused if you know them under a different name. And that's all for today. Till next time.
Dobrou chuť.
Bon appétit.
That That was Pavla Horáková with the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we are always happy to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.